en busca de un mejor destino para ti, lo que viniera de ti.
Welcome to the Inside the Journey podcast. This is episode number 39 for Sunday, February 9th, 2014. I'm Nelson DeWitt.
And I'm John Younger.
This week, we're going to be looking at some of the broader lessons that we hope people will learn from the documentary film and from my family story.
Hopefully we're bringing home the cost of war to a family.
Right, and that's something that we're trying to do in the film.
So that the next time there's somebody on TV saying, we need to go to war in Iraq, this is in our national interest, and if we don't do it, there's going to be a mushroom cloud, that we say, well, wait a minute here, this is what war means. The U.S. has obviously influenced a lot of conflicts, and oftentimes there are these broader overarching foreign policy goals. Right or wrong, there is this tremendous human cost, and a lot of telling your story is showing what can happen to a family. You know, you can extrapolate this to a lot of families.
So that's what we're going to hope to accomplish in today's episode, and it might be a little bit tricky, so bear with us. We're going to start by briefly talking about an article that I found as I was putting together last week's podcast.
The article is called New Memo, Kissinger Gave Green Light for Argentina's Dirty War. It's by David Korn. It's in Mother Jones, dated January 14th, and we will provide a link for those interested.
And the reason that this article I thought was so interesting was because in that episode we talked about Henry Kissinger's links to Chile and overthrowing the government there.
People and, disappearing in the late 70s and early 80s.
And then we talked about Argentina,
which had 10 times the amount of people disappear at the same time frame. You know, Chile had several thousand. Argentina had several tens of thousands.
And the article links Henry Kissinger to the dirty war in Argentina. And it's not a direct link, but it is sort of more evidence of his involvement down there.
Direct link, it's not direct evidence. Right? Yes.
Right.
It says he's an enabler and he greenlit the military to expedite human rights abuses.
And the question that this kind of raises is why a U.S. foreign diplomat was so involved with these wars that had very, very bad outcomes for the people who lived there.
We should describe what very, very bad outcomes are. I mean, essentially, right. Counterinsurgency tactics were employed against the civilian population, professors, students, labor organizers, left-wing agitators, not people that were picking up guns and saying, I'm going to overthrow the government. Okay? Normal people living daily lives were essentially rounded up, put in concentration camps, and killed. Some of the methods of killing were horrific. There were these things called death flights, and this is well documented, and I'm not making this up, where people were loaded into planes, drugged up, then flown out over a river or the ocean and thrown out of the planes. Another really kind of horrific aspect of this is pregnant women were often allowed to live until they conceived their babies. The babies were given to families and supporters of the military regime, and then the women were killed in various fashions. You know, this is dark stuff that happened, you know, not that long ago, and apparently this article describes it as with Henry Kissinger's blessing.
The question that I'm interested in and that we've talked about in other forums is, why is that? What's the mindset behind, and maybe it's not even Henry Kissinger specifically, but of the it's times, right? Why is it that it was such an imperative to undercut these in governments, to get rid of these left-leaning individuals or statesmen or...
Why do we have such blinders on when it came time for human rights? And what does it mean when we have blinders on about human rights?
Right. So what was it about the time that allowed us to put these blinders on? What you've kind of told me before is that it has to deal a lot with the Cold War and the mindset at the time. So that
I
might
grew
be
up
a
more in the
great,
Cold War than you did, you know?
right. And that's, I think, what's interesting about the two of us and what I've put where I have pushed you before, because you're looking at it with this Cold War mindset that I don't even know or understand. So
Well,
it'd be great if you got into that a little bit. Like, what was the mindset at the time?
I don't know. I don't know. It's a big question. What was it like growing up in the Cold War? But I mean, I grew up a lot in the Reagan era where, you know, the USSR was the evil empire. That was his phrase for it. I'd just say that everything was viewed in two ways. And it was like, what side are you on? The US's side or the Russian side or the Soviet side, right? I think we just had sort of goggles on about that, and it was very much like a black and white world. Not that everyone viewed it that way, but that's sort of the way our foreign policy operated, is there were two spheres of influence, and countries sort of had a choice of they could line up with the Russians or they could line up with the Americans, you know.
I guess I learned a lot about this mindset from the Henry Kissinger documentary that we've talked about before, The Trials of Henry Kissinger. And that film focuses a lot on the sort of Vietnam era politics where, as you described, we'd play two sides against each other for an outcome. And there was this whole madman theory and a lot of different ways of viewing the world that were, as you say, black and white. And that, I guess, was, I don't want to say a shock, but very interesting for me to learn about. In other words, it wasn't something familiar to my upbringing, I suppose.
Your more formative years have to do with 9/11 and
Well, no, not even. My more formative years were in the 90s, like after the Berlin Wall, when America was going through, I guess, a very prosperous time. The mid 90s, Bill Clinton era.
Not a lot of fear.
I mean, really, no international fear that. I mean, we had Operation Desert Storm, but that was very short and we didn't really
There were
understand
like
it or.
143 lives lost on the US side, and you know, the ground war lasted like 3 weeks or something, right?
So this concept of evil empires is just, nothing that we ever had to deal with.
Basically, I think there was a bit of a things were viewed in this one way, and there was a lot of paranoia, and so people in Argentina that maybe wanted a better life, you know, a lot of these Latin American societies were, you know, there were the wealth distribution was really, really, really skewed, and people who wanted to fight for some labor rights or some land reform were grouped in this category, and these internal conflicts in these societies became viewed differently by US foreign policy people like Henry Kissinger. And all of a sudden, you know, your dad aspiring to become a tailor, basically he didn't have the avenues to pursue that because of corruption and so forth. You know, him trying to have a voice about that became life-threatening for him, right? And there wasn't freedom of speech in these countries the way we have in the United States. There wasn't freedom of the press. I mean, you could be disappeared because you weren't on the government side of things. So you have these internal conflicts, which all of a sudden are made into something else. Nixon has said this is if Chile elected a socialist president, and he said we can't have a red sandwich. You know, Latin America stuck between Cuba and Chile. All of a sudden, it's all going to somehow. It's like the domino theory in Southeast Asia with Vietnam. If we cave here, it's all going to be red. And I'm jumping from country to country and conflict to conflict, but But El Salvador was really the place, and they say this, we're drawing the line in El Salvador. Nicaragua flipped in like in a fairly bloodless revolution and became a communist country almost overnight, and it scared the hell out of the hawks in American foreign policy. And the fear was that El Salvador was next, and it probably was. They said that's not going to happen. Like, the cost be damned, that's not going to happen, basically. Like, the line is drawn here, and whatever it takes. And that gets to the point of our documentary, right? I hope this wasn't too scattered. I am jumping around a little bit.
No, I thought that was great because to me, this goes back to the mindset thing. I still have a hard time understanding. We would sort of undercut a democratically elected government because we disagreed with the leader. Like that was very hard, and I guess still is hard for me to except we grow up in America, democracy, freedom, all that kind of stuff, and then to find out that it's only good to a point, and then we say, nope, like we can have our freedom, but you can't have yours, basically.
And there's a lot of history of that happening in the and well documented non-conspiratorial, like the CIA basically making coups happen in Iran, okay, in Guatemala, where democratically elected presidents were chucked in favor of basically US installed presidents. How do we bring this home? Because I feel like it's been
All
a
over
little
the place.
disconnected, so.
As we've researched the film, we've looked at all these other conflicts. We've watched the Henry Kissinger documentary. We've watched the films about Chile. We've, read
About Argentina.
about Argentina and Iraq even, and
In these societies, often it's these counterinsurgency tactics are employed on populations. The point being, in these societies, it's a time of war, and when in a time of war, human rights go out the window, and awful things start to happen, and we talk about that here. After 9/11, we loosened up our own view of human rights, and we had undisclosed detention centers around the world, which are starting to be documented. We have Guantanamo Bay. We put a lot of bad people, but there's a lot of documentation where we just did a lot of roundups, and there were a lot of people that really were victims, that were in the wrong place at the wrong time. And then once they got into a place like Guantanamo Bay, they were not getting out for 5 years, 10 years. Basically, we disappeared them, right? And I think this comes from somewhere. I think we have a long history of this. The point is, like, these some of the dark things that you hear about in the dirty war in Argentina, which are almost indescribable and inhumane, there's echoes of it today in our foreign policy, And I just think that if we have a better understanding of where it comes from, who believes it, and what it has to do with, that we could have more informed conversations about contemporary things that we get involved in.
All right, so let me try and tie it all together again, and
Okay,
then
and I'll shut up.
we've been talking about the sort of U.S. foreign policy over a number of years and what the mindset behind that was. And the point of the film is to try and contrast that mindset with the cost of war on an individual basis. And to me, the sort of icon of this struggle is with my birth father, who in El Salvador wanted to be a tailor growing up. When he was a teenager and going into college, he wanted to open up his own shop, his own business, but could not because of corruption and all these other forces at play in El Salvador. And then he joins a revolution which tries to. Which has this ideal of making a fair society for all. And that
Well,
doesn't
he
go
joined
well.
a what was a political movement. I mean,
Right. He
he was
joined.
way involved way before it was military,
Right.
right?
He joins this political movement in an attempt to level the playing field so that he can be a tailor. And after years and years of struggle and an armed conflict and losing everything that was probably near and dear to him, his wife, his son, his country, his, you know, he never got to see his parents again. After losing all of that, he moves to a country where he opens his own business making t-shirts. And he now has, you know, a house, two cars, a couple dogs, kids.
Dream.
Right. Yeah. What we would call the American dream, you know. So it's just looking at the world in this black and white way blinds us from seeing that we're not all that different. And that's something that you wrote in the introduction paragraph to the film, that at the heart of this film or story is the belief that finding what makes us alike or connected can change the world. And I think that that really gets to the point of both this episode and what we're trying to do with the film.
I remember, I'm very proud of that line.
Yeah.
And I hope we've jumped around a lot, but I hope by taking examples like your dad or taking examples like your grandmother, whose amazing persistence and drive and hope over more than a decade, you know, to look for you. I hope that we implant some images about war that aren't, you know, Rambo, First Blood, like I'm going to, you know, we walk into a movie theater and kill 100 people and there's no consequence and there's no lasting impact and we munch our popcorn and we go home. That's not what war is. You know, war is fought by real people with families, and the consequences are lifelong.
Generations long.
And, yeah. And these people have something to share about it.
Perfect. Well, that is a great place to end it. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We will see you next week.